Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lear. Traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, Karen Feinerman, and Dan Nathan. We start with the wild day on Wall Street after a big night in D.C., the Dow surging more than 500 points, soaring into the close, ending the day near the highs of the session. It is the best day for stocks following a midterm election since all the way back to 1982. But while Wall Street went wild, the real drama came from inside the Beltway. Our own Eamon Javers is back at headquarters with all the details. Eamon.
Yeah, Melissa, that's right. We had this wild press conference from the president in the East Room down in Washington, D.C. But then shortly after that, late this afternoon, the White House announced that the president had removed his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, replacing him with Sessions' own chief of staff, Matthew Whitaker, who is seen as somebody who is more friendly to the Trump White House, who is somebody who has been critical of the special counsel's office straying too far from its mission. Whitaker having written about a year ago an op-ed piece in which he suggested that the special counsel should not investigate the president's family and finances, that he should stick to the knitting of just investigating Russia. So this is seen as a move by the president that will have the effect of constraining the Mueller investigation into the Russia matter, at least keeping it focused on where it began, which was that question of Donald Trump and Russia, and is there any connection there? Meanwhile, the president at that press conference this afternoon was asked about the possibility of cooperating with Democrats. Here's how he phrased what his relationship with the Democrats is likely to be like going forward.
If they start investigating you, that you can play that game and investigate
better than them.
Can you compartmentalize that?
I think I know more than they know.
Can you compartmentalize that and still continue to work with them for the benefit of the rest of the country?
No.
Are all bets off?
No. If they do that, then it's just all it is a warlike posture.
So the president there is saying that if Democrats investigate him, then all it's going to be in terms of his relationship is a warlike posture between the White House and House Democrats. That the Democrats are signaling on Capitol Hill they are going to go forward with some investigations. So that gives you a sense where we might be headed with that. And then one more to flag for you guys. This one might be of interest to folks on Wall Street. The president was asked today at that press conference whether or not he would consider a deal that would lower, that would raise the corporate tax rate in order to lower middle class tax rates. Would he be open to such a trade-off with Democrats? He seemed to leave the door open. Take a listen to that exchange.
As an example, if the Democrats come up with an idea for tax cuts, which I'm a big believer in tax cuts, I would absolutely pursue something, even if it means some adjustment.
Even if it means some adjustment, the president there suggesting that he's willing to look at a deal that would raise the corporate rate, but no indication that we're going to get a tax deal next year because, as we saw, the president and the Democrats up on Capitol Hill are at loggerheads already, and we're not even 24 hours out from the election results last night, Melissa.
You know, Eamon, when the headlines came out that Jeff Sessions essentially was fired, you were on set with me on Power Lunch, and we immediately jumped to this possibility of constitutional crisis. Can you walk us through the dominoes as to how we get from here to there? Because that is what the markets, I mean, on the worst case scenario, needs to be looking at in terms of pricing things in.
Sure. Well, we're not at a constitutional crisis right now. The president has the authority to remove the attorney general. The attorney general serves at the pleasure of the president, as they say. The question now is, what comes next in terms of next steps? Is the president satisfied with this? Or does he also take steps to remove Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general who's been overseeing the Russia investigation? Does he also take a step to fire Mueller himself, the special counsel, the former head of the FBI who's been investigating him? The president has suggested today that he has the authority to fire all of those people. But that could provoke an enormous political backlash because it would look like the president is trying to stop an investigation that may be getting too close to home for him. And that's an inherent conflict of interest. And I think that's where you get this talk of constitutional situations and problems. And that's where you're going to see a big political reaction up on Capitol Hill.
Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers from headquarters. So a lot to unpack here, but one thing is clear. The news that Jeff Sessions was out actually accelerated after the rally here. Wall Street had already embraced the end result of gridlock after the election. So how long will this euphoria last, or will worries about the Fed and trade come back to haunt the market, Tim?
Well, the market was not at all worried about constitutional crisis today, and I think the market actually should be worried about the Fed. The Fed actually tomorrow will give you some statement. Tomorrow also, you know, you're going to actually have digested China trade data tonight on exports, imports, trade balance, et cetera. And we closed at 8.5-year highs on the 10-year today. So let's not forget that rates are a big issue. Again, we closed at 8.5-year highs on the 10-year. What's been hurting this market? I think it's been the Fed. I think it's been rates. I don't think it's been midterm elections.
But in terms of what had happened today, when it happened overnight,
right,
we're looking at gridlock already, and then we get the Jeff Sessions news. Does that all but ensure that gridlock will actually stymie any efforts on either side to get things
done? I think gridlock is what the market is counting on right now. They want to put a check and balance on Trump. Everything that should have rallied, rallied, so you had a risk-on trade today. But I think it's too far, too fast. I'd give it a little breathing room. I'm looking for a little bit of give back in the next couple of days.
Right. You're saying that same thing. Too
yeah,
much.
I thought it was too much. I mean, you know, the outcome was not shocking, right? That was what everyone sort of thought was the most right. likely scenario is exactly what happened. So the rally, I don't know. I kind of thought it was overdone. And the issues that haunted the market are still very much there, as each of them said, the Fed and trade. And actually, the market rising gives Trump a little more room, a little more rope, or call it whatever you want, to have a harder line, right? If we're right. doing better, China's doing worse, that gives him a little more negotiating power. So I wasn't so delighted,
and
actually.
After midterms, he's yes. got the ability now. He was holding back. He pulled right. the reins in mm-hmm. before midterms to go softer stance on China.
Right.
And now it allows him to say, let me go hard, real hard on China.
Oh, he went hard today. I mean, he went hard on everybody and everything around him. I mean, I think that one of the things that's interesting about the market reaction today is you removed a big uncertainty, right? So
right.
no one knew what was going to happen and how markets were going to react to it. And I wouldn't expect him sounding off at this press conference for the markets to react one way or the other either. That being said, I think that he's increasingly getting cornered here. I think that this is not really his stock market anymore. And I think when you think about the risk to this rally at this point, I think you have to think about European banks are down 30% from their 2018 highs.
But what do you mean it's not his stock market anymore? What do you
well,
mean?
Because I think for the very reason, I think that it's very unlikely there's going to be any more fiscal stimulus. I think there's very unlikely there's going to be any signature legislation that gets done bipartisan
over
the
next
year.
But isn't he still focused on it, though, Dan? I mean, I think China trade ultimately will be something he has to do something with because his scorecard is still the market.
He has control to do that, regardless of how Congress is made up.
He said that he goes to war if the co-equal branch of government that the Democrats just won start to do some oversight that branch of government was not doing prior. That's the way the government is supposed to work here, okay? So if he's going to war, then what gets done at that point? Nothing's going
to
get done.
War on there China.
There is a commonality where the Democrats probably want him to be tougher on a lot of these trade deals. That's actually a huge bipartisan issue where the Democrats might even push him to go further on China than he otherwise would have went with the Republicans.
Why do you think that?
Because it's a bipartisan issue. Everyone's been worried about the same issues for the last 20 years regarding China. This is the first president that's actually put his finger on the button. And Democrats actually back him up a lot more than Republicans.
So basically, you're pricing in that going tougher on China is all but a foregone conclusion.
I think that you should see him get a little bit tougher. Maybe it's after the meetings. Maybe he doesn't do it. Maybe it's after the meetings. Maybe there's not a great outcome. He gets a little more
hard line.
I think
trade is a political issue, though. I think when we thought of at least the first rounds of trade, especially as it was directed on China, was for Rust Belt states, was for certainly pivotal states to actually go after those votes that were most important to this president. I agree that, look, this should be a bipartisan issue. I think this should be more about intellectual property
yep.
and technology ripoff and all the things that we care about. But I do believe that trade has been a political. Hey, I talked about this on the campaign trail.
It's all
and by the way,
though, but it's something that both Democrats and Republicans have been talking about for a long time.
Yeah,
so I think
this is a
to your point, though, I don't think that this animosity. Yes, there's going to be a lot of it. There's going to be a lot of contentious behavior. But I think this is something that they probably both agree on.
I'm just going to say that the way that he dealt with NAFTA, he put a deadline on this. This is not how the China thing is going to get worked. We're not going to fix a budget deficit. I don't really believe that is what this is about. This is really about forced technology transfer. This
right.
is going to take months, if not quarters. So at the best case scenario, we get some agreement to start working on it constructively, not the sort of messaging that we saw last week between the president and Larry Kudlow, because that is just a mess. And if they want to do this on Twitter, then it's going to be a mess. And it's going to be the sort of headline that market participants are not
going
to like.
So are you not constructive on this market?
Well, no.
Would you fade this rally?
So my point is
what does this all mean?
I think we have to to focus on global growth. I think a miscue here, as we are tightening right now, as the dollar is rising, as the 10-year is at 3.23 at 8-year highs, I think we have the potential to see a thaw in global growth. And we're already seeing it in Europe and Asia. Look at these Macau numbers that we just saw out of Wynn today. So the point is, I think our economy is much more fragile than Larry Kudlow goes on cable TV and tells the world every day.
So you're negative.
I'm just cautious. Listen,
no,
Mel,
when we have a market
moving the way it did today, we could be back at 29.40 like that. And I said that last week, too. So I've not been.
Look, we've moved 8% in 7 days, folks. Yeah. We moved 140 S&P points in a blink.
I mean, October's and almost gone.
So,
I mean, what happened
so to be cautious
gone.
At this point, which I hear everybody doing, yes, we also know about these seasonals. We also know about the post-midterm dynamics. We also know that the market was overly bearish and that, in fact, a lot of this rally has come after an extreme move to the downside. So we've removed some uncertainty. The world is not coming to an end, and I think that's probably how we approach the end of the year.
All right. For more on whether the election euphoria can last and what's next for the markets, let's bring in Bessemer Trust Chief Investment Officer Rebecca Patterson. Rebecca, always nice to see you. You've heard the debate here on the desk.
Yeah.
What do you do with this rally? Do you believe in this rally? Do you fade this rally? Or do you think stocks are going
to
go higher
here? Just to kind of pick up where we left off, October to me was completely overdone. You have global growth at 3%. You have U.S. growth that's decelerating, but still in the threes. So to have the market pricing in recession in October, to me, felt like a mismatch. So to bounce back, I think, it makes sense. And then if we have buybacks kicking in again, I saw one report today suggesting November buybacks would be the strongest ever on record for the month. I mean, that's a big support for the market. That could last. Seasonals can help. The trade thing I do think is meaningful. I think our best case scenario, Dan, I agree with you. The best case scenario is that they agree to talk. So we have a constructive direction, but no resolution. And the worst case scenario is that Pence brings a deal and Trump says not good enough, and then we're back to square one and we realize they can't even agree within the White House. That's, to me, how I'm scenarioing it. But I think that's kind of icing on the cake. I go back to, what does the president want? He wants GDP growth to stay in the threes until 2020, which is hard to do without more stimulus and with the Fed raising rates. Having a trade war doesn't help him in his goal. I'm not suggesting it's going to get resolved quickly, but he has to balance out the trade war versus keeping growth high enough that he can campaign on that.
And I mean, I completely see where you believe there is sort of a Trump put underneath the economy and that he wants to keep it at 3%. Hmm. But it's so much harder to do when you have the Democrats controlling the House. So how does he make sure that put is the floor?
I mean, aside from just jawboning the stock market or giving some positive developments here and there on China or something, I don't know, because he doesn't control the Fed. Maybe he'd like to, but he doesn't. And I think they're on a path. And unless growth slows meaningfully, they're going to stay on that path. And at a certain point, to what you all are saying, that does start impacting profit margins. It starts impacting corporate debt servicing. So I look out at the next year, year and a half, and if this rally keeps going, I think it's probably an opportunity to take a little off the table with a medium-term view.
Is there any mechanism by which they can delay the tariffs if they do think there's a chance for constructive dialogue?
I mean, I think there's lots of things they could do. One possible scenario would be right now the $200 billion in goods, the tariffs at 10%. Right now it's scheduled to go up to 25% in January. Mm-hmm. They could hit the pause button and just say, okay, we're staying at 10%, and as long as negotiations are constructive, that's all we have. That also gives U.S. businesses more time to figure out what they do in case tariffs go up. This has happened really fast. For a company to adjust supply chains and processes for a 25% tariff, it's not a lot of time. So if they can just stall, U.S. companies can figure it out or possibly figure it out, which can help sustain growth.
So, Rebecca, then stalling and pausing means we probably have to face all this in the first quarter of next year. And so while you don't invest month to month, you're thinking longer term. How would you handicap the first quarter of the year, especially in a world where things have slowed down a little bit? In other words, do you feel that we could be in a more constructive place having worked through some of this, or do you get probably a little bit more cautious into the new year saying, hey, we may be okay for now?
I mean, if we have a melt-up like we had today into year-end, I think you're greedy if you just count on it continuing all through Q1. But China has put in a ton of stimulus into the market, cutting interest rates, fiscal stimulus. Eventually, that should feed through, and the growth slowdown hopefully will turn into a stabilization. Yeah. That's really good news regardless of trade. The buybacks continue. We shouldn't forget the fiscal stimulus, while next year it's smaller than this year, there's still a lot out there. We had $300 billion spending package for this year and next year. Half of that comes through next year. So I don't think growth suddenly goes to a halt. But do people look at that, the fact that we still have good growth, it should support earnings, and a slower rate doesn't mean doom, it just means a slower rate, or do people focus on that second derivative and get out because the pace is decelerating? I think I'm in the former camp. But with the Fed continuing to remove liquidity and starting in January, the European Central Bank is also going to stop adding liquidity. The volatility bouts are likely to get more, not less. So I do think even if Q1 is okay, taking a little off the table, when we get those better levels, if you're taking a medium-term view on your capital, is probably the right way to go. Now, if you're more speculative trader, a shorter-term trader, I mean, like right now, we were talking before we got on about China. Yeah. We've had a great entry level to add some China risk if you think there's a possibility of a positive trade development in the next month.
Rebecca, thank you.
No, my pleasure.
Good to see you. Rebecca Patterson of Bessemer. So what do you do, Steve?
You finally have competition with stocks. You have the Fed raising rates in three different ways. Quantitative tightening. They're paying for the tax plan. They're selling treasuries, $2 trillion in treasuries. They're lifting rates. They're raising rates. I think at this point, if you do get a lift in the market, you use it to make sales.
Coming up, tech strikes back, the Nasdaq jumping nearly 3% today, and a top technician says this could be the beginning of a major rally. He'll tell us the three names that could lead the way. Plus, we're monitoring some of the big earnings reports after hours. Wynn, Square, Qualcomm, all on the move, all to the downside. We'll bring you the latest headlines. And later, cannabis gone wild. The stocks are surging on two big political wins, and it could lead to the end of prohibition on a federal level sooner than you think. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. It has been a wild, wild day in D.C., and all the drama could actually bring us closer to the end of pot prohibition. Pot stocks getting a big boost this morning after a number of big political wins at the polls last night in various states. And then one of pot's biggest enemies, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, resigning today. That turbocharged the group. Aditi Roy's in San Francisco with the whole story. Aditi.
Hi, Melissa. What a day. There were some key wins yesterday, but the biggest boon for the cannabis industry came with the announcement of Jeff Sessions' departure today. The stock impact was immediate. Tilray shares ended up 30.6%, the best day it's had since mid-September. Canopy Growth up 8%, Aurora up 9%, Cronos up 8%. Sessions was a key roadblock for the marijuana industry. Shortly after California legalized recreational marijuana at the beginning of this year, Sessions rescinded the Cole memo. That was the Obama-era rule that essentially left states alone when they legalized marijuana. Canaccord Genuity analyst Bobby Burleson telling us, in terms of impact, it depends on his replacement, but in general, it should be interpreted as a positive, considering Sessions' staunch opposition to marijuana legalization. The Sessions' departure comes after some key wins for the industry in the midterms as well. Voters in Michigan approving the legalization of recreational marijuana, Utah and Missouri passing ballot initiatives for medical marijuana. Tilray CEO Brendan Kennedy spoke to CNBC today before the Sessions' resignation. He talked about the midterms.
People are waiting for the Berlin Wall of cannabis prohibition to topple over in the U.S., and I think yesterday's election removed a few more bricks from that wall. I think that we'll see other countries around the world maybe take the lead over the next few months.
And back in this country, another major move last night, Texas Congressman Pete Sessions losing his reelection bid. He's blocked dozens of cannabis bills. His loss could help push marijuana legislation through Congress. So, Melissa, we started with one Sessions, ending on another.
Aditi, thank you. Aditi Roy in San Francisco. Well, Tim Seymour, who's long a number of names, sits on advisory boards for three cannabis stocks, says the pot industry has actually scored even more victories in the last day than you might think. Our very own cannabis king, Tim, is over at the Plasma to break it down. Tim.
Hello, Mel. So, right, the state of cannabis, as we can see, this is the map yesterday or 2 days ago. Here's the map now. We just added a couple more dark greens and one light green. Dark green being medical, light green being full recreational. In fact, remember, Michigan, by the way, politically turned blue last night, and then it turned green because cannabis effectively in the form of full recreational is alive and well. And there's a lot of things going on the basis of what the fallout was. Saying it's the end of prohibition, to me, is a little aggressive, but there's no question that Brothers Sessions, and they aren't blood brothers, but they are certainly brothers from a different mother, and that they're both very much against the cannabis trade. Didi talked about both Pete Sessions, head of the House Rules Committee, has been blocking all kinds of legislation from the floor. Attorney General, former Attorney General Sessions, was certainly critical of the Cole memo, had been out of his way to enforce the rule of law. Bottom line is, let the states do their job. The States Act is coming. I think there's very good news. And then the other part of last night was really the pro-cannabis governors. And when I think about that, it's not just Pritzker in Illinois, which certainly brings the Midwest, I think, one of the strongest backers of full legal cannabis, but obviously Cuomo, and then, you know, around us in the tri-state area, you have Connecticut and New Jersey that are about to fall. Ultimately, you get to a place where people are starting to look to the East Coast as being certainly a place that will begin to challenge the West Coast. Remember, the West Coast states have not only flipped legally and kind of legislatively, but certainly mentally and socially, the West Coast has been the center and the capital of this country in terms of cannabis. The argument right now is that the East Coast-West Coast rappers feud may be beginning in cannabis. In other words, there's a lot of folks that the East Coast could be a bigger market, can argue that it's a very different market, that consumption and density will be much more powerful here. Once New York goes, you can bet New Jersey and Connecticut will go. In fact, New Jersey is arguably ahead of New York, but I bet New York's not going to let that happen. So let's watch this. But again, a very, very important time. I don't think prohibition goes away. I think a lot of the companies in the business don't want it to go away overnight, but it's happening.
Steve.
Tim, so Canopy and Cronos, two of which, the names of which I'm long, took a hit. Canopy took a hit, a 47% hit. Cronos took a 57% hit. Isn't this more about what their actual revenues are and how much you're paying for growth? All this legality seems like a great tailwind, but we still have the revenue issue. Do you agree?
It's not even just revenue, Steve. I mean, it's valuations, and it's ultimately the size of the markets. And so we've talked about this. The Canadian integrated companies were first to market. I think the biggest argument against what's been going on with the Canadian names, remember, the entire sector is probably up 20 to 40% in the last five sessions alone. So they've taken a lot of that back. That's good news. But think of all the U.S. companies that are coming to market. Curaleaf, MedMen, Acreage is coming next week. You've got Harvest coming next week. These are big companies, and I think people are looking at valuations just very differently. They're also looking at services and ancillary businesses. They're looking at technology. They're looking at processing. So it's not just one way to play the sector. And I think those big companies that were based just on production or funded capacity have to be rethought in some way.
At the same time, Tim, I mean, if there is a move to federally legalize marijuana, let's even just say for medical use, and you can transport across state lines, which has really been the bottleneck for the industry in terms of achieving scale of production or anything like that, won't that endanger the smaller players and really tip the hand to the larger ones?
Well, right now, actually, the fact that the interstate issues are I think they're actually protecting smaller business. I think they're keeping them.
Right.
They're allowing companies in particular states to dominate an individual state, get some critical mass. We're seeing that in Florida with Trulieve or other companies that I think are able to win in this environment. I think the States Act is coming. And I talked about, I think, you didn't need last night's House take by the Democrats to actually have the States Act be a very real and nearer term event for the cannabis industry than people think. I actually think that's the best news out there.
All right. For more on the ongoing legalization of cannabis across the U.S. and what it could mean for the stocks, you can head over to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, First in Business Worldwide. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Coming up, tech strikes back. The sector is surging. And a top technician says this is just the beginning of a major rally. He'll tell us the three names that will lead the way.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on chipmaker Qualcomm. The stock is moving lower in the after-hour session. Let's get back to John Fort at the New York Stock Exchange with all the details. John.
Hey, Melissa. Despite that beat on the top and bottom lines, the guidance and specifically revenue guidance in focus on the call. I talked to, or got a note, I should say, from Canaccord Genuity's Mike Walkley. Here's what he said. Absence the one-time tax gain, the Q1 19 or December quarter guidance is well below consensus. It appears a soft smartphone market, loss of QCT share to Apple, that has to do with the modem build-in, and ongoing legal costs are impacting guidance. And Qualcomm did say, indeed, the weak guide is partly because of the drop from 50% modem share in Apple to zero. Also, the royalty dispute costs with Apple are running a bit higher than expected. And there's, on the other hand, 1 week less in the quarter. So that's 1 week less cost, and that partially impacts the upside to the earnings guidance in fiscal Q1, Melissa.
All right. Thanks, John. John Fort at the New York Stock Exchange. Before we continue with the semi-trade, we just want to point out that Jeff Sessions, the former attorney general, just walked out of the Justice Department. So we do have some video of him walking out of the Justice Department. This is happening, I believe, moments ago. But again, this Not yet. We'll get to that in just a moment.
It's going
to
be exciting.
There's a tease for you, right?
No question.
I mean, his walk could really tell you lots of things.
Good
anyway,
swagger,
good riddance.
Maybe swagger. Semis were just a small part of the huge rally getting back to the semi trade on the heels of the Qualcomm quarter. The Nasdaq jumping nearly 3%. Even Dan's MAGA stocks looking pretty great again. Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Apple all getting a huge boost in the rally. So do you... I don't even know if I should. Do you stick with the MAGA trade?
So
I mean,
here's the thing,
you're the
Mel.
Father of the MAGA trade.
Now, as the father of the MAGA trade, we actually had hats made. We just wanted to be really in with this. We actually have hats for all of you.
Who's
guys.
We?
Chris
stand
up in EC, kind of hooked this up here.
Thank you.
Know,
you.
Here's
Thank
the thing.
You.
Okay, I kind of feel
I'm
like,
not going to mess up my hair right now, Dan, but I will put it on.
I kind of feel like here's the thing about the MAGA trade. I don't think this is Trump's market anymore. I think it's this market. I think it's this MAGA. Okay, so at the end of the day, look at the performance that we saw today. The outperformance we had, Microsoft up 3.5-4%. We had Apple up 3%. We had Google up 3.5%. And we had Amazon up almost 7%. I think that the direction of the market from here on out this year is this MAGA. It has very little to do with what the president of the White House has to do.
So, cool hats. Thank you very much.
Thank Kristen.
I understand what you're
Christmas,
saying. It's
Hanukkah,
important. These are going to be driving the market.
Yeah.
But I'm unclear on whether you're positive or
well,
negative
here's the thing.
On these.
I do feel
you
this.
Go back and
that,
forth.
That I think that the pullback they had was necessary. I think there was too much sentiment involved in these four names. I think they made up 40% of the NASDAQ 100, almost 20% of the S&P 500. There was just so much positive sentiment. So you have this correction here. And I think Apple, found a little home at 200. I think Microsoft had good results. I think Google, there were some things to pick on, but generally it was pretty good. Amazon, there was some stuff to pick on. But this is how bull markets actually find new highs after corrections.
But you got to believe that there's no revaluation from value to growth, that was just a couple of week event, and now we're going back to chasing growth, or is that a year-end seasonality?
So my point is really simple. I'm not saying to pound the table here. We did a segment last week. I said to continue to fade them. That was before Apple's kind of downdraft here. My point is for the S&P to make new highs, MAGA is going to drive the trade. That's the only way to do it.
We will continue with this MAGA discussion, but we do want to get to our next guest. He says there are three names in the tech space that look ripe for an even bigger rally. Maybe there's an alt MAGA trade out there. Let's go off the charts with Rob Slimer of Fundstar Global Advisors at the Plasma.
Does he have a hat, too?
He hasn't come over yet to the desk.
No, his own hat. Maybe he's got an alt.
Oh, I don't know. Rob, take it away.
I have no hat, but I have charts, so we'll start with there. I have to fully agree with Dan. If you think about the progression of the market correction, incrementally, week after week, we saw groups starting to roll over, with leadership often the last one to fall over. Technology had its big hit. We can see that obviously coming down around the 200-day. It's not a specific support level. It's a support range. And we're starting to see the S&P 500 technology sector start to bottom out. All the short-term data was depressed. We're getting that oversold bounce. So as Tim had pointed out, we're up 5, 6, 7 days in a row. But what was notable coming into the end of last week, beginning of this week, and what we put in our note on Tuesday morning, the tech stocks really lagged. They really didn't start to generate any upside momentum until the last couple of days. So our call was that as the market's going to rebound, we do think we're getting a year-end rally. Tech is going to lead that rally. The participants are going to go back to the existing growth leadership. What I think is critical and what we have to be watching as we go forwards is this relative performance line right here. That's the technology sector versus the S&P 500. We don't want to see new relative lows. That would be a concerning sign for us that tech is not going to be rebounding. But we think from here into year end, tech continues to lead. So let's look at a couple of bellwethers that have had big corrections. Microsoft, obviously right back to the 200-day here, is an important rebound. Now, it rallied very strongly today, up 4 or 5%. But what's critical, at least from my perspective, is that relative performance trend all the way through the correction held in. So I think this continues to be a core long-term holding, at least until that relative performance decays. And I think it's showing evidence that it is going to lead into year end. Now let's look at Apple. It was one of the last of the big caps to correct very sharply, but close enough to the 200-day moving average that I think that correction is done. And when we look at that relative performance trend, again, still higher highs. I'm assuming this is going to be a low. You have higher lows all the way through. That trend is still intact. Apple is still buyable at current levels, particularly for a year-end recovery. And then lastly, the semis have been a very difficult area to look at. We talked about Applied Materials a couple weeks ago as putting in a peak at the beginning of 2018, but incrementally they're starting to improve. I think they are the trade into year-end as well. When we look at Intel, again, we had lower lows coming into last week's lows, but that relative performance began to firm up. You started to see higher relative lows. And despite being right underneath the 200-day moving average, I think it has more upside. So if you're looking for laggards, you don't want to buy the names that ran like scalded cats today. Look at Intel as a laggard.
All right, Rob's going to come on over. Rob, we got so many questions, especially because he's not endorsing half of MAGA, and he's throwing Intel in there. But first, Rob,
Miyaga, maybe.
Miyaga?
Miyagi, obviously.
I don't know. First, I want to ask you about today's rally and whether or not, because we're back to early October levels. So right. Is it like October never happened, or was there damage done to the market that we still have to? Actually, excuse me, before we do that, we're going to take a look at Jeff Sessions.
Swagger.
Who is walking out of the Justice Department. There he is, to a round of applause. This as he submitted his resignation letter to the president earlier today at the request of the president, according to his letter. But you see the staff there applauding Mr. Sessions as he is making his way out of the Justice Department on this day. Steve, what do you think of his replacement, what this could mean for the investigation?
This is something where when you look at what's been going on with the Trump presidency, this has been a thorn in President Trump's side. And without him, I mean, President Trump has wanted to get rid of him for quite some time, wanted to wait till after the speed bump of the midterm elections. Now he's sort of got freedom to do a bunch of things that he wants to do and get on with his own choices. He was disappointed by Jeff Sessions, and hopefully for the country, maybe he can move forward a little bit better.
Okay, never mind.
We want to move on here, but again, Jeff Sessions leaving the Justice Department. But I'm sorry to interrupt, but in terms of the damage that we saw in October,
right.
Did it happen?
The uptrend for the market itself, the S&P 500 and even the Russell 2000, you could argue, are still intact. We see more damage in a lot of the foreign markets than we do in the U.S. At the sector level, there's a lot of damage done, particularly in the cyclical. So our view here is we're getting a year in recovery. We've talked about this before. We think that the market cycle, the low that began in 2016, already 3 years into that market cycle, the fourth year is 2019, we're concerned about it. So we think this is a trading rally into year end, and then we're going to see more divergences developing, particularly in the cyclical side. So tech has been leadership. It often breaks right at the end of the correction. We're getting the rebound. That's one area you want to be concentrating to capitalize on this bounce into year end.
Do you not like Dan's MAGA?
I think
you only liked half of, you only liked the MA in MAGA.
One of the reasons why we came up with a really good acronym for those four letters was that Facebook was not particularly important once it lost a few $100 million, and Netflix was never particularly important. And these four stocks that made up almost $4 trillion in market cap were really driving most of the performance of all the U.S. indices.
100%.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at Microsoft, Adobe, CRM, Google, Apple, what else was I missing? Amazon. They have all corrected down to levels. They were all in our note on Tuesday, coincidentally enough. They've all collapsed. I think you've seen a washout on the technology trade. It rebounds. It leads the market higher into year end.
Rob, thank you. Rob Slimer of Fundstrat. Just quickly, Karen, Facebook, a real underperformer in today's market. Trump, during his press conference, did say he wanted to work with Democrats to regulate social media companies. Do you think it's going to feel the brunt of something?
I mean, it's definitely been, you know, the problem, the poster child. I think eventually that'll fade, but it was disappointing, no question, particularly at Google, up, you know, nearly 4%. A lot of the similar issues, right? I don't know why it was so
bad,
actually. I am.
I've actually written a couple op-eds about Facebook.
On CNBC.com, yeah. I'm sure.
Well, the commentary was totally gibberish, too, because he immediately said the exact opposite next. So.
Check out shares of Square. The stock up 140% ahead of earnings tonight, but now it is falling in the after-hours session. We'll hear what CEO Jack Dorsey just told Wall Street. And will Disney be the happiest place on earth after its earnings report? We'll look ahead to tomorrow's big market mover. Much more Fast Money still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Square. The stock is moving lower in the after hours. Let's get to Deirdre Bosa, who's monitoring the conference call with CEO Jack Dorsey. Just spoke. Hey, Deirdre.
Hey, Melissa. Well, right at the top of the call, Dorsey addressing the void that CFO Sarah Friar will leave as she departs to be CEO of Nextdoor at the end of the month and Square's search for a new finance chief. Have a listen.
We have a really high bar. We will not be sharing a timeline, but we are working with urgency, and this is my number one focus at the company, is to make sure we fill this role.
Now, one analyst once called Fryer a rock star CFO, and she has really presided over the company during its enormous growth and stock gains of the last few years. So some are still questioning why she wasn't offered that CEO role and whether Square can continue its momentum without her. Now, October was Square's worst month in over 2 years, and a big part of that was Fryer's departure, as well as some concerns about credit risk in a rising rate environment. However, it is up more than 100% year to date. For the after hours, that sell-off we're seeing, that can be attributed to light EPS guidance. And quite a bit of time on the call as well, guys, was devoted to Square Terminal, its all-in-one new hardware tool that it hopes will help it continue to capture larger sellers. Dorsey saying that expectations around it are quite high. Back to you.
All right, Deidre, thanks. Deidre Bosa. Well, speaking of Jack Dorsey, today marks the five-year anniversary of Twitter's market debut. That stock is up 45% this year, while Square is surging more than 136% as of today's close. So is Square the better bet, the better Dorsey bet specifically, Grasso?
It's still a growth stock. This stock traded down to $65 off this value versus growth onslaught that we saw. It's 28% off the lows. I bought it for the services. I bought it for growth. I'm remaining long the stock. Mm-hmm. I think that if we continue to get growth versus value heading into year end, this stock should recover the damage probably in the next 2 days.
Yeah, Karen.
I mean, the only thing wrong with this was that it came out on a day when the stock was already up $5, right? I mean, there was a lot to like here. EBITDA numbers were big beat. Expectations are just super high. It's priced for perfection.
I don't think Jack's going to have a hard time finding an A-list CFO yep. to fill that job, too. And I think Karen's right. The fact that stock's just down a few percent after being up 26% since last week at its lows. So acts pretty well.
Would you rather?
It's a game.
Twitter or Square?
Twitter or Square. Long both names. I would rather, and what's my timeline on this? If I had a longer term outlook, I think Square, in terms of ERP and democratization of that whole profile, these guys are so far ahead of everybody in terms of long term growth, Square.
I'll put it to you since he owns both, so that's not fair.
I think Twitter, also underperformed today, given that headline stuff. I think they have the most risk of all of these companies.
The most?
Yes.
Why?
And
more
because
than
I think they're the least profitable. You look at it on a GAAP basis, and if they have to increase costs considerably, especially as user engagement has decreased or user growth has decreased,
they don't
then
have
they're
the
going
to
have
issues. I really don't think they have the same.
They don't have fake accounts and.
Yes, but I don't think this is a community of trust like Facebook is. I think this is a media outlet. I think this is a place where people are throwing as much stuff. I think they have different security issues.
The expectation of
absolutely. And by the way, I don't think they have as far to fall as Facebook has because Facebook was vaulted.
I think you're totally wrong. I mean, maybe I'll write an op-ed on CNBC.com about it. I mean, I just don't see. We have the president of the United States uses it as his main bullhorn and lies on it five times a day in an official fashion.
Don't make this political. If anything, the president has actually helped this company. I mean, he's been out there showing how powerful of a medium that Twitter is. It's not about whether people are saying things that are accurate or not. In fact, that's the whole thing. In 140 characters or now 280, people have actually had the ability to say whatever they want. And that's why people love Twitter. I mean, that to me has been proven in this political environment.
Let's stick with earnings here. Disney's
got nothing to say.
After the bell tomorrow. He's getting a rap in his ear. Options traders are betting the stock could shine off the results. Let's get to Mike Coe in San Francisco to break it down. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah, so the options market's implying a move of about 3.5% for Disney earnings tomorrow. That's slightly more than it moves on average, which is about 3.3%. And today we did see more bullish than bearish activity, calls outpacing puts by about 2-1 on above average volume. And the most active options were actually the June 125 calls. We saw over 2,700 of those trading for just over $5. So buyers of those are making bullish bets that it's going to be above that 125 strike price by at least the $5 that they pay. That would be up about 12% in just over 220 days. And of course, Disney is at lower valuations than it has traded at historically, so one might understand why you would make a bet like that.
You like Disney into earnings?
Disney is at the upper end of the trading range right now. It actually looks like it wants to roll over. If you wanted to reach a little bit here, you could say it's a head and shoulders pattern on the stock. So I like that it's exploding here. It's the king of content, has a lot of levers to pull. But technically, I'm looking at it. It looks like it's one more pop, and then you're just going to see the drop.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. Mike Cohen, San Francisco. For more options action, check out the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Well, Etsy is surging today. The stock is crushing its much bigger online retail rival, Amazon. The CEO speaking to Jim Cramer about the battle between the two companies. We'll tell you what he said. And Wynn Resorts reversing course, heading lower now, down double digits after reporting results. See what Wall Street is saying next on Fast Money. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Wynn Resorts as Wall Street is weighing in on the company's report. Let's get to Contessa Brewer at headquarters. Hi, Contessa.
Yeah, Melissa, shares plummeted during the earnings call with Wynn Resorts. Fresh off a strong third quarter in Macau, CEO Matt Maddox threw some cold water on expectations for the fourth quarter. Maddox expects the end of the year to be softer on the high end. Now, the majority of EBITDA comes from the premium end of the market, and right now they're seeing a slowdown in VIP and premium business. That's a contraction of confidence, as it was labeled on the earnings call, and it's being felt even in Las Vegas, where the baccarat revenues declined. Maddox says he's remaining cautious until there's more clarity around what is happening with Asia and the premium business there. Harry Curtis from Instanet says most investors have felt the market was stable and not contracting, so the assessment that it softened somewhat is a surprise. Curtis also blames that after-hours market drop, stock drop, on muddy messaging on CapEx. Though Maddox talked about generating free cash flow when they opened Boston in 8 months, then he went on to highlight all the investments they're going to make in Macau, building out this 7-acre parcel next to Wynn Palace, adding 1,300 suites, all suite rooms, with its concession up for renewal in 2022. Here, the company's just highlighting the unique ways it's contributing to Macau. But in Las Vegas, Maddox went on to pull away from founder Steve Wynn's grand plan for Paradise Park. That lagoon, or as Maddox called it, a large public swimming pool on the Las Vegas Strip, that's history. In its place, a revived golf course, expanded convention facilities, and these ideas for a 38-acre parcel directly on the Strip. But this has been a rough week, Melissa. Down to 94 bucks, recovered at 113 today, and in the after-hours trading back down again to about 107. So, ooh, rough ride.
Yeah, roller coaster. Contessa, thank you. Contessa Brewer joining us from headquarters. Tim, just quickly, what is the trade, and do we read into this China slowdown and should be worried about other companies leveraged to
China?
Well,
there was, you know, she visited ahead of Golden Week. There's been a slowdown. There's been concern about the regulatory environment there and just, you know, again, capital flight and whatnot. On a valuation basis, this stock is crazy cheap, I think, relative to its peers. We're trading about 9 times 2019 versus peers that are 14, 15 times. So free cash flow yields of 8-9%. This company's acting like it's going out of business. We know we've got to pull back. I think this is a China kind of impact trade that's gone really, really bad.
So Wynn is down basically 32% before heading into this. And then you have Las Vegas that's down 18%. Those were the Macau-facing names and, to a lesser degree, the Vegas names. Then you had MGM, where you thought you were clear, getting
China,
out of the way of China, and that's down 16% year-to-date. But from Wynn, if we hear that Las Vegas is an issue as well as Macau, then there probably could be a little more weakness going forward.
All right, coming up, Wall Street gets artsy and craftsy. Look at shares of Etsy exploding today, up almost 25%. The stock is up, get this, 200% in a year. The CEO is on Mad Money tonight.
Wow.
We get a first look at what he is saying as his stock soars. Is it a better buy than Amazon? Much more Fast Money live from the Nasdaq in the heart of New York City in just 2 minutes. Welcome back to Fast Money. You could call it a modern-day David versus Goliath battle in the online retail space. Etsy soaring 24% today following earnings. That stock is now up almost 200% in a year. Amazon, meantime, is up 50% in the same time. Etsy CEO Josh Silverman just sat down with Mad Money's Jim Cramer. He weighed in on what he thinks of Amazon, reportedly naming Long Island City, New York, near Etsy headquarters in Brooklyn, as the site of its new headquarters. Here's what he said.
We feel great about our employee value proposition, and come what may. And here's what we have going for us. We think we've got the best team, certainly in tech companies on the Eastern Seaboard. Right. We think ours is the best. And we continue to attract great talent. And the reason is, first and foremost, I think our mission is really a meaningful, important mission. And that matters. Great people want to work in a place with a great mission.
So can Etsy really compete with Amazon? I love how the discussion is always about Amazon putting a smaller rival out of business. Actually, they can coexist.
It does make me think, could Amazon just buy them, right?
Yeah. Well, we thought that a long time ago, too, right, when they did this handmade, handcrafted line on Amazon.
Didn't Guy have something on Etsy?
Yeah,
I mean, it was
very
well done.
But it hasn't gotten too expensive for them to buy.
Right.
They could still afford it. I mean, good for them. That was impressive.
I think the biggest story is that here's a marketplace business that's doing very well. And, you know, remember Pete had his power pitch a couple weeks ago on eBay? This is a company that has, you know, 20x the revenues, 20x the revenues, and you say to yourself, it's trading at multi-year lows, it's a cheap stock. So I think the takeaway that I have is that marketplace businesses are still important, even in the world of Amazon, and you're likely to see more consolidation.
Would you rather Etsy or Amazon, Grasso?
I mean, longer term, you got to go with Amazon. But Etsy also got hit by 28% during this value versus growth sell-off as well. But longer term, you got to play the one that has a bunch of different things that it could play to. That's Amazon for me.
Yeah. I mean, no one asked me to play the game. Absolutely Amazon.
You're going to self-play.
I'm going to self-play. All right. And after Guy's sock puppet, I'd say. I just think that Amazon, first of all, has shown that ultimately after a pullback for broader markets, this company's coming back to its life.
All right. For much more on Etsy's blowout quarter and the full interview with the CEO, be sure to tune in to Mad Money with Jim Cramer at the top of the hour. Final trades next. Final trade time, Tim.
We're getting a melt up into year end. It's emerging markets I think you want to buy. That's what I bought today.
Stephen Grasso.
Lennar took a little rest from its escalating stock price. It was up 15% basically in a week. Lennar.
Karen.
Yes. Shot themselves in the foot, in the leg, and me as well.
Is everybody
today,
wearing a hat?
But I think this is overdone. Man. Wait a day or two, I'd buy some Coors.
Dan.
Steve wanted one in red, but they didn't have it. So here's the deal. I like the bat better than Magna, the Baidu, the Alibaba, and the Tencent. So Alibaba, we're here.
Got a new acronym.
Steve
already
has one in red, by the way. Mad Money, Jim Cramer starts right now.
Not with a hat on.